Well, good morning and welcome back to the Faith Radio Network. I'm Bill Meyer. What's an evangelical Christian to do when 42% of Americans believe that people of faith are part of the problem in our world rather than the solution? David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons answer that question in their new book, Good Faith. David is president of the Barna Group, which is a leading research and communications company, and he joins us this morning here on Faith Radio. Hi, David. How are you?
Hey, Bill. Nice to join you.
Before we dive into the new book, can you tell us a bit about the history and the mission of the Barna Group? I know a little bit about you, but I'm guessing some of our Faith Radio listeners may have heard the name Barna, but they're not really sure what you guys do.
Yeah, so Barna Group is 31 years old, started back in the mid-80s, and started by George Barna, an author, a social researcher. And really the way the company has evolved is that we do a lot of research on social trends using polling, market research, all sorts of different tools, research tools, qualitative and quantitative. And the purpose behind all of that is to try to understand our times, to get an accurate picture of the times in which Christians are living. We get a chance of working with a lot of different pastors, leaders, business leaders. We're actually located in the Los Angeles area, so we work with a lot of entertainment companies, trying to understand Christians and understand them as a market segment. And our mission really is to help people understand the times and then know what to do, which is a phrase that comes from 1 Chronicles 12:32, the tribe of Issachar, people who understood the times and knew what the people of God should do. So that's just a little bit of history on us.
Now, some people have referred to you as kind of the evangelical Gallup or Pew organization. Is that a fair characterization?
It is, yeah. I think, I mean, we do different types of things and study things a little bit differently. We approach all the survey design and survey analysis from a distinctly Christian point of view, but the same kind of data collection methods, the same sort of analysis and, you know, sort of tools as researchers are very similar in nature between, you know, Barna and Gallup and Barna and Pew.
Well, one of the things I appreciate you about your group, David, is that you are committed to good scholarship, to truth, to scientific inquiry, doing it right. And one of the troubling findings that has come up in some of your past studies is, unfortunately, many self-described born-again Christians seem to live their lives in pretty much the same way as non-Christians. What are some of the attitudes and the behaviors that you guys have measured that, well, we find that born-again Christians or people that, you know, check the born-again box tend to mirror the non-Christian world?
Well, it's interesting because that's one of the findings throughout the many decades of our work that's been somewhat controversial, because we do find, exactly as you say, that there aren't as many differences between Christians and the general population. Now, part of that is because the general population is full of so many self-identified Christians, so it depends a little bit on where you draw the line as to what counts for a Christian. So the more committed the Christian is, the more he or she will be, you know, different in certain regards. But generally, when you look at you know, sort of attitudes about life and how to live it, you know, sort of the kinds of media they're consuming, the way they think about the world, Christians really are not so different. And this is an area of really critical concern. I mean, on one hand, you could say it's really good because Christians are in the world and they're not of the world, and you know, you could say they're sort of trying to be salt and light. And there's a lot of positive news we could talk about from the studies, but I think this is one really challenging reality that so many Christians end up looking, you know, so similar to the world, to the broader culture. We find even in this new research study, you know, that the moral perspectives of today's Christians often so closely mirror the world that you can't even really tell the difference. The huge proportion of people believe that the best way to find yourself is to look within yourself, and that's true both of the broader culture as well as the Christian community.
That is really tragic, David. Let me ask you this. When you focus on those Christians in your studies who are committed, truly committed to the gospel of Jesus Christ, to attend church regularly, and who truly have a biblical worldview, as you guys define it, do you see distinct differences?
Yeah, we really do. Those are the areas when you start to boil down the data and you look not whether a person is attending church or whether they're active in certain sort of spiritual activities. There's slight differences there, but the real differences that we begin to see come related to their views of Scripture. And so the 7 or 8% of Americans who we would define as having a biblical worldview, and these are people who believe that the Bible is authoritative in life, they believe that they have a personal responsibility to share their faith with others, a whole range of things that we sort of test in our research. And it's actually a pretty simple set of 7 or 8 questions that we ask. And some people think it's not sort of strict enough, but even when you add those 7 or 8 questions together, we start to really see differences in the way people live and think and their attitudes, from a whole range of things like social issues, abortion and same-sex marriage and a whole range of other things. But those are where we really begin to find differences even in their generosity levels and their volunteerism, a whole range of things. And that's, I think, part of what we really want to remind people of is that it's not so much about whether you're just in the building, it's sort of your posture before God's holy word and before, you know, what God is asking us to do with our lives.
The tragic thing is, you said 7 or 8% of Americans, and we obviously have a large number of Americans who would call themselves Christians, or again, they might check the box, Christian, Jewish, atheist. They check the Christian box, or even call themselves a born-again Christian, say they've had a born-again experience. But really, when you boil it down, we're talking about a pretty small percentage of the general population.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's a small population. Another group we look at is called evangelicals. There's a lot of overlap with those who have a biblical worldview that's based on the Barna definition. Again, we don't ask a person in our research whether they consider themselves to be an evangelical or a born-again. That's actually how a lot of the political polling is done. Do you consider yourself to be a born-again or evangelical, which is a really terrible survey question because it uses two very distinct theological terms, born again and evangelical, and then it says, are you either of these, yes or no? Someone like President Obama might consider himself to be a born again, but not an evangelical. So it's a really terrible survey question. And yet, when you look at the size of the evangelical community, as we define it, about 7%, if we wanted to be a little more open about that, we might say they're about as big as 11%, just depending, again, on how many questions we include and how strict we are with that definition. But here's the point on that. If we were to look at 7% of the population, that's one in every 13 adults. It's just under 20 million Americans. If it's 11%, that's one in every 9 Americans. And that's a huge, what we call a super segment. You know, it's like Hispanics in America represent about 17%. African Americans are just under 14%. And so those are small minorities, but they have a huge impact on our collective culture. Evangelicals similarly have a very important role within a broader culture. And just because we're a small, minority doesn't mean we can't have influence. It's just a matter of how are we going to measure and use that influence in a very powerful and become a force for good in the world.
David has just authored a brand new book just out this past month with Gabe Lyons. The book is called Good Faith. And David, let's talk about some of the major findings in Good Faith.
Well, one of the things that we discovered in this project, the whole purpose was to try to understand how Christians can live in a very skeptical culture. And we find a lot of evidence in the research now that's sort of verifiably true, that Christians are, in fact, living in a more hostile, more anti-Christian environment. 9 years ago, Gabe Lyons and I did a book called Unchristian, which looked at younger adults, especially non-Christians, 16 to 29. Now those young people are in their late 20s and early 30s. And so when we look at this, it's an interesting trend that Americans now view Christianity to be essentially irrelevant to their lives, that it doesn't have a lot of bearing on their life, or they view it as extremist. And by that, it means that the Christian faith is actually doing bad to people. It's actually religion is bad. 42% of Americans believe that people of faith, as you alluded to earlier, are part of the problem. And so Christians have to sort of take stock of this, and it means that, we have to understand what is the point of skepticism, what are the points of skepticism for people, why are they frustrated, and how then do we respond? And, there's a lot of pressure on the Christian community, and I think we have to understand what is causing that, why is it that it's, especially in an election year, what is underneath the surface, and then how do we as Christ followers really need to think about, leading with love and also holding to our convictions.
I asked your colleague, Gabe Lyons, this last week. Obviously, part of the problem, and perhaps a large part of the problem, is the way that we have conducted ourselves in the past, both as individual believers and certainly as local communities of believers, as local churches. But how much of the problem is also due to the media's antipathy towards Christianity and their portrayal of Christians in, let's say, your average primetime television show or your TV newscast?
Well, media is a primary, if certainly the dominant kind of player. It's not the only influence in the way Americans think. We've actually done quite a bit of studies on this that show that you know media certainly affects Americans' perceptions in a very powerful way. And part of what's interesting is that we also find a lot of conversational impact. That is, the relationships, the interactions that we as Christians have with people around us are some of the other ways that people create these images. And we find a lot of evidence in our research that a lot of those conversations actually leave a bad taste in people's mouths. And listen, this is a whole long discussion we could have. On one hand, you know, we're not responsible for how people perceive the gospel. I mean, the scriptures tell us over and over that, you know, people are going to react to it, whether we like them to, you know, respond in a certain positive way or not. They're going to have their own reaction that says the God of this age blinds the minds of unbelievers. So there's very strong language in scripture. So we certainly live in this very powerful media environment that shapes people's imagination. It, you know, it chooses people often to represent Christianity that are sort of the most extreme examples of you know how not to be a Christian sometimes. But I think what I'm asking as a researcher to listeners and others who might take a look at this project is that we have to take account of the fact that a lot of conversations make up these perceptions, and we're accountable then to how we live in that environment. Those conversations, those difficult conversations we have about why we're committed to certain beliefs, really do matter, and we have an ultimate responsibility to do well by people.
One of my perceptions, David, is that unfortunately, there are a large number of evangelical Christians who don't really know what they believe, aren't really able to articulate their faith, the Christian worldview, in a way that's rational, in a way that's logical, in a way that's winsome. You know, Peter tells us very clearly to when we're having that answer, to do it with gentleness and respect. And unfortunately, there are a lot of us who can get defensive. How much of the responsibility you think lies there, and maybe even taking that a step further, that Christians aren't being equipped in their local churches to be able to have these conversations?
Well, I think that's you put the hammer on the nail head there, which is that you know, there's a whole range of difficult conversations now that are emerging for Christians that have always been there, but are more front and center for us. These are issues related to life and disability and race and sex and sexuality, same-sex attraction, a whole range of things. And we think that Americans are really struggling. A lot of Christians in our communities are struggling to know how to have those difficult conversations. And so that's part of what the book Good Faith goes into, is to equip parents and grandparents and local faith leaders to really have these conversations. We're concerned about young millennials who might not understand what it means to live with their convictions. They really want to love their friends. They want to hold on to their convictions, but they don't know how to do that. They don't know how to have these difficult conversations. And it's not just about having simply a logical response. It's about leading with love, about the Good Samaritan, you know, being people who actually go out and love others at great cost to ourselves, to defy the boundaries between, you know, good and bad and gay and straight and all the rest, and try to love people. And listen, part of our expectation as believers, Gabe Lyons and I in this book, is that we should hold to these biblical convictions. We should have confidence in the historic claims of Christianity about sexuality, for example. But the way we go about that, we can't have any self-righteousness in our lives. Otherwise, we end up being, you know, like the religious leaders of Jesus' day, actually part of the problem. We become a barrier rather than a bridge to people understanding Jesus in their life.
I know my former boss, Jim Daly at Focus on the Family, has really, I think, tried to be very intentional about doing exactly what you're saying, the work that, for example, Focus has done with adoption and foster care, the fact that he partnered with an openly gay legislator in the state of Colorado to work on the sex trafficking issue in Denver. That, for me, when I see what Jim is doing, it sets a great example of exactly what you're talking about.
I couldn't agree more, and I think Jim's doing a great job of leading in a very public way. And I think this is the example of, you know, in a very pluralistic culture, and when we say pluralistic, that means there are many faiths, there are many ethnicities, there are many faith groups, including the rise of those who are atheist or agnostic or have no religious affiliation. And I think part of what we have to acknowledge is in that world, we have to be equally committed to the idea of evangelism, that is, that it would be ideal for these people, that God wants all of these individuals to become Christ followers. And at the same time, that we hold this tension that we also believe that they have, people who are different from us as evangelicals, would have the rights and the ability to be uniquely who they are, and that we're not trying to, you know, brainwash people. We're not trying to, you know, always be adversarial with everyone, that there's a different way of doing this. And we think that the best example of how to do this is actually in the person of Daniel in the Old Testament, who lives in a very pluralistic culture, who is a person of good faith. That is, they live their faith out in public and then live their convictions. And we see really interesting stories. Obviously, we know the story of him and the lion's den. But what a lot of people miss is that the early days of Daniel is one of him accommodating culture. And that's not a dirty word. We actually think that living in a pluralistic culture means we need to have these difficult conversations. There's this incredible story in Daniel 2 where Nebuchadnezzar wants to kill all the pagan philosophers because none of them can interpret his dream. And Daniel actually says, don't kill these guys. Let me go to see the king. And he puts his own life on the line to save the lives of all of the people who would ordinarily be his philosophical and spiritual adversaries. And I think that's a very powerful example of faith, of good faith in action, of being sort of willing to go into the world, into society. He becomes, of course, Secretary of State, essentially a political leader within the Babylonian Empire. He serves for three different kings during his tenure. And I think that's an example of how we as Christians in a very pluralistic world, and, you know, Jim Daly is a great example of doing this in a modern day context, we've got to create deep relationships with people who we disagree with, because even if we disagree with them on a lot of things, we could learn to be friends. We can learn to have meaningful relationships and work on shared causes that allow for us to build a better community. And that's what Jesus calls us into the world to do. Of course, it still means we want to see those people become Christians as best as possible, to be salt and light in their life as well.
Now, David, one of the major flashpoints between the prevailing culture and an orthodox biblical worldview is sexuality. How can Christians have constructive conversations with friends or neighbors or coworkers who have really bought into the anything goes sexual ethic?
Well, I think this is one of the most difficult conversations we can have today. And again, the whole point of our project, the book Good Faith, and the research that went into it was to equip Christians to have these difficult conversations. So I think this is the most difficult conversation that we can have in our culture, because it's so complicated and it's so difficult for people. And first, we, you know, really are committed as both authors and as dads ourselves to the historic Christian ethic that, you know, sex is to be expressed between a man and woman in a covenant marriage. And yet there are so many things that are confused in our world today about sex and sexuality, whether it's pornography. We have a big study coming out about that. Whether it's, and by the way, you know, teenagers today think that it's worse to not recycle than to view pornography. How morally confused we are. And so there's all sorts of confusion in our culture today about sex and sexuality. And when it comes to same-sex attraction, you know, first, this is a great example of where I think the media has created a narrative that everyone has changed their mind, that, you know, that you're on the wrong side of history if you believe that, you know, that same-sex attraction is a morally, you know, wrong thing, and that same-sex relationships are morally wrong, so you should just get over it and, you know, stop being bigoted. And we find in our research, we documented in the book that, you know, most Americans, and certainly most practicing Christians and most evangelicals, haven't changed their mind. They're still feeling a lot of tension because they don't want to be unloving to people who experience same-sex attraction. But we go through a whole range of ways of thinking about this, ways of talking about it, ways that the church could sort of find a deeper theology of singleness that applies to all of us. More Americans now are single than ever before, not just same-sex attracted people, but, you know, like of all sorts of persuasions. And so the church has, a responsibility to find some really good Christian answers to these things. And we think some of the book gives those tools for some of these particular kinds of difficult conversations.
The book is called Good Faith. The co-authors, David Kinnaman and Gabe Lyons. David, thank you so much for your time today, for your commitment to Christian scholarship. And I look forward to reading this book cover to cover myself.
Thanks a lot. Well, we appreciate that, Bill. And, you know, we poured our hearts and soul into it. And the research is one thing. And then, you know, as dads, as churchgoers, as people who want to see the Christian community thrive in a very complicated culture, you know, it was a really hard book to write. But we actually wrote it in some ways for our own children. We have teenage kids, Gabe Lyons and I do. And so, you know, we were trying to think through how can we help them, knowing the things that we've been seeing and learning from our research, how can we help them to have these complicated, difficult conversations in a way that is true to biblical history and scriptures, and also, you know, leads with love. And so that was part of the heart behind it.
Well, kudos to you and Gabe for doing exactly that, David. Thanks so much for your time, and may the Lord continue to guide you and direct you in your work at the Barna Group.
Thanks, Bill. I appreciate that.